This last week, my family and I were watching some of the Winter Olympics and watching these athletes. I remember at one point we came on and some of the different athletes came out and they would often announce where they're from, but then sometimes how old they are. And then you look and here's a 16-year-old comes out and they're going to go down the half pike or they're going to do the slalom and you're watching or ice skating and you're watching them do these incredible things. And I think back, when I was 16, I was happy to make the varsity, let alone make the Olympics. But then we got into the discussion of all the time, the practice, the sacrifices that went into that. So I did sports in high school and in college, and thinking, college, I was 2-3 hours a day of practice. But for a lot of these folks, it might be 5, 6, 7, 8 hours a day, sometimes from the time they're 4 or 5 years old. Now they're time after time, and all the energy all put into this moment where they're out on a stage before the world. And Paul talks a little bit about that at the end of the passage that Amy just read, about athletes training for a prize, and he's thinking maybe of the Isthmian Games. You've heard of the Olympic Games, but the ancient Greece started in Olympia, and there were also the Isthmian Games, which were kind of a rival to that down in the bottom of the Greek peninsula. And every 2 years they would happen, and athletes would gather, and there would be racing and wrestling, all kinds of events, and they would train, and at the end they would get a crown, and it was just simply a laurel wreath, some leaves that would fade away after a little while. But he compares the training they went and endured and the discipline required to him preaching the gospel. And there's a sense of where he was talking about it's an intentionality, that it's not something that just happens by accident, but it needs to be intentional, and it requires sacrifice. It requires discipline. So Paul, this writer of what we've been reading through the letter, what we call 1 Corinthians, Paul is an early follower of Jesus who started a number of churches. He's writing to the church in Corinth, down on this Greek isthmus, and he's writing to them about what it looks like to live as a follower of Jesus. And he's talking to them about his call to preach the gospel being the announcement of salvation in Jesus as the saving king, about his life, death, resurrection, and ascension. He's saying, I'm called, I'm compelled to preach this, and I need to do it, to share, to proclaim this story. But he also says that to tell this story, you have to embody it. It has to somehow take shape in your life. And this is more than just living a moral life. Sometimes you say, well, we've got to live like Jesus. It's about modeling our life that follows the pattern of Jesus. And so he's talking about this in the context of preaching the gospel. And so this pattern of living. So what is the pattern of Jesus' life? What is, as I've titled these sermon series, a cross-shaped life? To think about that as we begin this morning, I want us to go to another passage written by Paul. It's in his letter to the church in Philippi, what we call the letter to the Philippians. And I've mentioned this before, but I think as one writer puts it, I like his idea of saying, this is Paul's master story. This passage in Philippians shapes how Paul thinks about who Jesus is and the way he understands it. So it's in the book of Philippians in chapter 2, beginning at verse 5. And what I want you to do as I read this is pay attention to this. There's kind of a pattern that goes on where he says, although X, we could say, not Y, but Z. So he's setting up, he's saying, there's although something, not that, but something different. And also the sense of intentionality. So here's what Paul writes. He says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. In other words, think, act, live the same way as Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing. So you hear that, he says, not taking the advantage, but this. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess, acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. So you see this sort of pattern. He says, though he had the rights, though he had these privileges, he didn't take advantage of those, but rather took the form of a servant. And so this is, as Michael Gorman, this shape, this master story for Paul, that's the way he says, there's this, though this, something else, and rather that. And so this is the story that Paul is telling to the church in Corinth. This is a church that had all kinds of troubles. There was dissension, there was division in it. And what Paul's telling them is they need to remember this cross-shaped life. They need to remember a Christoform, a Jesus-shaped life, a cruciform, a cross-shaped life, modeled on the self-giving love of Jesus. Because most of the problems in the church resulted from not living that way. It resulted from people claiming their rights and their freedom, ignoring how clinging to them harmed others. It came from distorted ideas of wisdom and power. And so all this is going on. So for example, in chapter 8, which we looked at last week, it was an issue of freedom and rights. There was a group of people, they were free to do something. They had the right to do it. But Paul was saying, when you exercise that freedom, when you exercise that right, you're hurting other people. So for the sake of the gospel, though you have the right, you give it up and become something else. And so even though we have the right sometimes we don't do it for the sake of others. And now what Paul does is he takes that same idea of even though you have the rights, even though you have the freedom, sometimes you set them aside for the sake of others. His initial address was within the church, it's important. But now he's saying, we also do the same thing. We also model this Jesus-shaped life in terms of people who aren't part of the church. We model this same thing when we look to people outside the church, that this cruciform, this Christ-shaped life is a way to live towards those in, to win people, and that was the language used, to win people, to invite them to receive salvation, to evangelize, to tell others about Jesus, whatever kind of language we want to use. He said, we use that same thing. So back to the beginning of the passage we read. He says, though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. So you see this, his intent, his goal is to see people know about Jesus. And there's this intentionality. He does it for a particular reason. He doesn't do it out of random, but he does it for a particular purpose, to learn, to teach people about Jesus. And so again, we have this language. Though I am free, I made myself a slave to win as many as possible. So there's this, though this, not that, but instead, though I can do this, I don't take advantage of this, but instead I do something else. And so there's this pattern that's going on with what he's doing. So 9:19, that's chapter 9, verse 19, comes in the middle of chapter 9. The early part, he does the same sort of thing, and he argues, and I'm just going to kind of summarize that to see how he leads into it. The early part of chapter 9, he's talking about financial support. He's talking about how he has a right to receive financial support. As an apostle, as someone sent by Jesus, it's his right to be supported by the church. He points to the other apostles. He said they receive that. He points to people in other professions, like soldiers, he says. Part of their job, there's an expectation that they will be paid for what they do. He also points to how when you're involved in producing something or making something, there's an expectation you receive some of that product. So he's saying, I have the right to financial support. But Paul doesn't take that. He doesn't exercise that right. Instead, what does Paul do? He works as a tent maker. He works in a manual labor job. A manual labor job that probably some looked down on and despised. I mean, today in today's world, we think of manual laborers, and we have a certain regard and say, these are people who work hard. In Corinth in particular, those who worked in kind of those manual labor jobs, they were kind of looked down on. They were often the slave. They were often at the bottom of the class, and so they were disdained by people. But Paul takes on this job. And it may have even been that the people in the church in Corinth, especially the elite, the upper class who were a part of that church, we're kind of wondering, well, wait a minute, this is our leader? Do I really want to tell my friends that my teacher, the one who teaches me and leads me, is a tent maker? But we ask, why did Paul do this? And he says it back in verse 12. We didn't read this. He says, if others have this right of support from you, Shouldn't we have it also all the more? So we should have the right, but we did not use this right. On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. In other words, in some way, he sees accepting the money as hindering the gospel. So his decision isn't based on, well, I'm going to show them I can be a tent maker. His decision is saying, if I don't do this, if I take the money, it's going to somehow hinder the gospel. We don't know why. Maybe he thought that the wealthy would expect favored status, which certainly wouldn't happen in a church today, where those who give a lot of money would expect that somehow things would be done their way or the pastor would listen to them. Or maybe because he thought it would prevent him from reaching some of the people in the lower status. Maybe he thought if he kind of rubs shoulders and takes money from the upper class that those down at the bottom wouldn't want to hang around with him, wouldn't want to listen to his message. Maybe he was afraid there would be hierarchy set up in the church. Maybe he was afraid for himself and he thought, if I accept money from people, it might discourage me from paying attention to those who don't have as much. Truth is, we don't know the precise reason. But what's clear is he had the right to receive the financial support, but he thought taking it would hinder spreading the gospel, so he gives up the right. Think about that. He has a right to it. He's perfectly within his rights to say, financially support me. But he knows that if he accepts that support, somehow that will hinder the gospel. So what does he do with this right? He says, I'm not going to take that. I'm going to set it aside. I'm going to give up my right, something that is due me, because I want the gospel to spread. So you see this pattern that's going on. He has a right. There's a privilege, there's a freedom, but he gives it up for the sake of the gospel. And so there's this intention, this goal that's going on. And so we saw that in Jesus. Jesus had rights, he had privileges. He was with God, he had all these privileges, but he sets those aside. And why does he set those aside? For the sake of the gospel, for the sake of saving people. I have a freedom, but I don't take it. I set it aside, but instead, I adapt a different passage. So go back to 9:19. Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. He's free in the sense of he doesn't take financial support, but he becomes a slave to everyone. So what does he mean by being a slave to everyone? So he says this, to the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law. Though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but I'm under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. A little confusing, isn't it? So what? Not this, but not that, but we'll come back to exactly. So, and then to the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I become all things to all people, so that by all possible means, I might save some. So again, what's his purpose for doing all that he's doing? To win some, to spread the gospel. I do all this for the sake of the gospel that I may share in its blessings. So what's this big, long, complicated, so to the Jews I became as a Jew, to those under the law I became as under the law, to those not under the law I became as... That's what he's talking about, being a slave. Well, Paul was Jewish, so in what way, he says, to the Jews I became like a Jew, he was already a Jew. He says, for those not under the law I became as those not under the law, but the truth is, Paul continued to talk about the law. He didn't give up being Jewish. He doesn't renounce those things. So what is he talking about? Is he just being a pretender? Is he just going in and saying, well, today I believe what you believe. I'm following your convictions. And then another time coming in and doing something else. Is he simply some sort of religious chameleon? Sort of adapts to whatever is going on. I think something else is going on. I think the big word that we might want to use today is he's contextualizing it. He's taking the story of Jesus and applying it to people's lives where they are. He does this by entering into the world, which is, again, exactly what Jesus does. What does Jesus do? He enters into our world. He becomes human. He takes on flesh. He understands pain. He understands sorrow. He understands temptation. He understands those things because he enters into our world. He sees things from a different point of view. And even if you were to go back and read the teachings of Jesus, he doesn't teach the same way to every group. Certain groups, he uses parables. Sometimes he quotes scripture. He looks at different ways. Sometimes he has different kinds of conversations with people. He has one kind of conversation with some of the religious leaders. He has another kind of conversation with a woman at a well in Samaria. Because he takes the same message, but he says that message can be shaped, it can be contextualized, it can be adapted to different situations. And that's what he's talking about here. And that's what I want us to think about is we're called to share Jesus with others. It's in part a willingness to enter into their world. Now, clearly, we can't become everything. When Paul says, I become as that, he doesn't literally become those other things. But he begins to enter into their mindset. Now, it doesn't mean we become sinners. So, in other words, it doesn't say, well, in order to reach the thieves, I become a thief. But instead, he's entering into the world. It's understanding. So we understand that in concept about missionaries. You know, we have folks in our congregation who've traveled to other countries to share about Jesus. My guess is two of the things that they did when they were getting ready to travel were, one was learn the language, right? If you're going to share who Jesus is with a people who don't speak English, you can't go over and simply expect them to speak English. The other you might do is learn their culture. What are the ways that their culture works? Why? Because you don't want to offend them. You want to be able to understand why is the family structured the way it is? How does gift giving work in this culture? What are the structures? What are the hierarchies? What are the ways to show respect? How does shame work within this culture? And that's what we do because you want to understand because you don't want an obstacle to the good news. What we often do is we think about that in terms of missionaries. We think, oh, certainly if I were going to Congo or if I were going to Malaysia, if I were going to Brazil to share the gospel, I would learn the language, I would learn the cultures. But we don't stop and think that it's the same thing if we're going to tell our neighbors or our friends about Jesus. You think, well, I already speak English. You may speak English, but do you speak their language? I mean, we all speak English, but I'll tell you what, I see things sometimes, and I don't know what people are talking about when they use them. Maybe it's acronyms they use, little things they use, phrases they use, or even within the United States, there's certain pockets of people, they use the language differently. When they talk about something, they mean something very different. And I'm not simply talking about the debate between like pop versus soda or anything like that. I mean, those are different kinds of languages. You have to understand that. But in certain parts of the country, in certain different ethnic groups, in different socioeconomic groups, words mean different things. People have different ideas about things. And so it's the same sort of thing. So it's about entering into the world. And so that's what Paul is getting at. He says, if we want to share the gospel, if we want to tell people about Jesus, we need to enter into their world. We need to learn their perspectives and their views. Understand where they're coming from. Become as they are. Now, that does not mean agreeing or affirming everything they believe. To enter into their world, to begin to do that. But it does mean understanding, to truly understand them. And now, this can be hard. I mean, can be, it is hard. To truly understand someone different. One of the reasons is because we have not experienced what they have experienced. And so as I'm speaking with someone, I'm trying to understand and I want to enter in their culture as I'm becoming like them, I don't understand what they've experienced. And that's true for every single one of us. That we truly don't understand it. Even if we grew up in the same sort of family, even if we grew up in the same town, we all have different experiences. And so we need to begin to, how do we enter into their experience? A lot of that involves asking questions. Simply getting to know people to understand where they're coming from. And asking questions not simply for the sake of trying to defeat their arguments or trying to figure out the next thing to say, but asking questions simply so we can know who they are, where they're coming from. Years ago, we did a series, and we've done it a couple times here at the church, which goes through something our denomination has used as a way to share the good news with people, and there's an acronym called BLESS, but the second one is listening. And I remember in that hearing, in one of the trainings or something I went to, it was like the magic words of tell me more. Of just simply saying, when you're having a conversation with someone and they start to say something, you say, tell me more. As they're telling you about their experience, well, tell me more about that. And to truly listen to what they're saying, because the truth is, most of us are not very good listeners. But to listen to what the person is saying, and it's putting yourselves in their shoes to show some sense of empathy. Again, not in the sense of understanding their feelings, to enter into their concerns, but also recognizing their differences. And so I was thinking about that. I was like, well, okay, those are abstract principles, but what might that look like? So I was thinking of using myself as an example. So imagine I am talking to a person and I have this person and I've developed a friendship and I'm wanting to talk about who Jesus is. And I want to enter into their experience. Now, part of my life experience is I grew up in church. I mean, I don't remember a time when I wasn't going to church. From the time I was little, we were going to church and I was going to Sunday school and I was learning Bible stories and lessons, and we were in church every Sunday. And when I was in high school, I was hearing all these stories. And then eventually I went on and I went to seminary and learned all this. So my life has been connected with the church, connected with Jesus as far back as I remember. The stories are familiar. You talk about something, and I may not know the exact detail, but I've heard that story. Somebody references Noah or Abraham or Paul or Corinth or Philippi, or say, oh yeah, I remember that. Even if I don't remember the details, it's familiar to me. Somebody talk about Jesus' death on a cross, and I know what they mean just by that little phrase. But now imagine that the person that I'm talking to never went to church. And here in the United States, that's becoming a much more common thing, where people not only haven't been to church, but they're not at all familiar with the stories. Remember a number of years ago, there was one of the talk show hosts would go out on the streets and ask people about the Bible. And they'd ask him maybe a story like, Noah or Moses, which for any of us who've grown up in the church, we know about Noah and Moses. We may not know every single detail, but we know the basics of that story. And you'd hear the person talking, and they would have absolutely no idea who Noah was or who Moses was. And in part, it was played for a laugh, and it was easy to kind of laugh. But if I'm seeking to share the good news, if I'm wanting to win this person to Jesus, do you think it's helpful if I'm having a conversation with them and I say, well, there was this man named Abraham. And they're like, who's Abraham? And I kind of laugh. I was like, come on, you don't know who Abraham is? No, what do? I enter into what it's like. I try and use my imagination of entering into a story of what would it be like for a person who's never been to church? What would it be like for someone who's never heard a story from the Bible? How would I begin to share who Jesus is? Because if someone has a basic background in religion and they know some of the basic stories, I can tell them about Jesus in one way. But if someone has never heard any of those stories, I have to think about it in a different way. So I could say, like Paul, I became as someone who didn't grow up in church to those who didn't grow up in church. Now, I can't go back in time and erase the fact that I went to church. But what I can do is begin to enter into their story. I can begin to try and see, how do they see things? How do they understand things differently? What do I need to explain differently? What do I need to say that is different? How much do I need to explain because I need to become as they are? Why? Because I want to see them know who Jesus is. Or put it this way, my experiences in church for the most part have been good. I mean, they're not every single one for sure, but for the most part, I've had a good experience of church.
59 years of mostly good experiences of church. But there are people who have not had good experiences of church. There are people who have experienced abuse at the hands of pastors, abuse at the hands of elders. There have been people who have been shunned, looked down on, despised. And so if I'm talking to a person who has experienced that hurt, what do I need to do? I need to become as someone who's experienced hurt in the church. I need to begin to enter into the feeling, not denying there. So if they say, well, if someone starts to tell me, well, I just had a really bad experience in church and people were so mean and judgmental, and my first response is, well, not everybody's like that. See how it shuts down a conversation. But instead, what could I do? Tell me more, right? Begin to enter into, and then begin to, what's my goal for that? To understand their feelings. To understand where they're coming from. The goal is sharing the gospel. The goal is to win them, to help them know who Jesus is and want to follow them. But I can't do that unless I understand who they are. I can't do that unless I understand where they're coming from. I can't do that unless I know that, because then I can help and know, what do I want to tell them about Jesus? What stories would be the ones that would help them best? So to someone who's experienced church hurt, I become as someone who's experienced church hurt. And so that's what Paul is talking about here when he's talking about this desire to love. And he says it requires discipline. It requires, again, it's hard work. People come from different ethnic backgrounds. They come from different origins. They come from different socioeconomic status. They come from different educational backgrounds. We all have our own unique ones. But what we can do is we can begin to enter into people's lives so we can become as them. Again, it's not entering into their sin. It's not entering into those things. And we can't fully become like they are, because that's not who we are. It's not our experience. But what we can do is begin to think about, how can I enter into this life? How can I begin to understand who they are? And that's what Paul is. Now, I have the right, the privilege to say church is a great place. I have the perfect right to say I know my Bible. But what do? I set aside those rights. I set aside, some don't like the word, I set aside those privileges, those things that I have that I've learned, for the sake of knowing the others, of knowing them and helping them to know Jesus. So that's what Paul is talking about here as he's looking at these things. We have rights, we have privileges, we have all these things. We have the right, we have the privilege, we have the freedom of knowing Jesus. We have all those things going on. But sometimes we have to set those aside for the sake of the other. To set aside and say, well, I'm not going to claim that the church is a place that never hurts people, because I want to enter into your story. I have the right to say that because that's my experience. But like Paul, who models himself on Jesus, I set aside my rights. I set aside my freedom for the sake of others. And at the end, it's a goal, it's an intention to share the gospel. And one of the things we are called to do, one of the things we are compelled by Jesus to do, is share the good news with people. To tell them about who Jesus is, to tell them that they can find new life and freedom and forgiveness in him. But what Paul's saying is, it's a discipline, it requires work. It's not something that simply happens by accident. The people who stand on the podium and have a gold medal around their neck didn't stumble into Milan that day and say, what's going on here? Slap on some skates and win a gold medal. And in the same way, to win people to Jesus requires discipline. It requires setting aside the time. And what Paul's asking us to do is, what are we investing our time in? Are we investing our time in things that fade away, or are we investing our time in something that lasts, and something that lasts is a person knowing Jesus? And am I willing to set aside my rights, my freedom, my privileges, all those things I have to enter into somebody else's world for the sake of the gospel? To set aside things that are mine by rights, by privilege, for the sake of the gospel. And that's what Paul invites us to do, is to look at the life of Jesus, to look at the life of Jesus who, though being in very nature God, set aside those rights and became a servant for the sake of the gospel. Paul, who set aside the rights of the apostle to claim financial support for the sake of the gospel. Paul, who set aside what he had learned and all these things he knew to enter into the world. He became as people were. He entered into the world to understand all for the sake of the gospel. And so he's inviting us to do the same thing, to think about how can I set aside my rights? How can I set aside my freedoms? How can I set aside my privileges? How can I become as the other? How can I enter into their world? How can I begin to truly understand them out of love for the sake of the gospel? And so may we be people, Fruitland, who have the heart, the shape of Jesus, to set aside our rights, to set aside our privileges, set aside our freedoms, and become as the other, to enter into the world, to understand them, so that they might know the gospel, so that they might know the good news of Jesus and life in him. Amen.